call this meeting of the Legacy Funding Division to order. And well, we're still short one, so we won't do the minutes yet. Today's agenda, we'll have a report on the Governor's Clean Water Budget Recommendations from Rebecca Flood, and then House File XXX, the Clean Water Fund, Representative Torkelson. Ms. Flood.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my
Welcome.
Name is Rebecca Flood. Thank you for having me here. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Water Policy at the Pollution Control Agency, and I just appreciate the opportunity to take a couple brief minutes to explain one of the primary differences between the governor's recommendations and his budget proposal for clean water funding versus the recommendations from the Clean Water Council. And as many of you probably know, the Clean Water Council, in developing their budget recommendations, did an extensive interview process with the various agencies that started in June of last year and continued over the summer, and they finalized their budget recommendations in the September time frame. And at that same time, as we as state agencies were developing our various budget proposals, one of the things that, in addition to that, that I undertook as an initiative was to go out and visit with various planning and zoning administrator staff regarding SSTSs, or subsurface sewage treatment systems. We had heard a lot of concern from various county groups and planning and zoning administrators about the rule that we had developed in 2008 and then just completed amending in 2010. In the last session, in an effort to try to address some of the county's concerns, Representative Wilganius and Representative Britta Saylor sponsored some legislation that in part created a enforcement and implementation task force that the agency would run in conjunction with planning and zoning administrators and the Association of Metropolitan Counties, as well as the Realtors Association, in an effort to try to improve our working relationships with each other. I think I can characterize some of the concerns that county staff have as we developed our rule, that they felt as though they were viewed more as stakeholders rather than partners in implementation of the SSTS program. So this task force came about through that legislation, and then over the course of the summer, I went out and visited with the various planning and zoning administrator districts. There's six districts in the state, so I traveled throughout the state conducting listening sessions throughout the state. That process concluded in October. One of the primary issues that I heard from the counties and the planning and zoning administrators was the lack of funding that they had for the administration of their programs. So the primary difference that you will see between the governor's recommendations in his budget versus those in the Clean Water Council regard an effort to get more money for the SSTS program throughout the state. So I just wanted to make that clear. That, and unfortunately, by the time I visited, I completed the visits throughout the state and developed this recommendation. It was in the October time frame, past the time when the Clean Water Council had completed the development of their budget and into the embargoed time frame of the governor's budget. So I just appreciate the opportunity to explain that primary difference and would be happy to address any questions should you have them.
Representative Wilganius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Flood, one of the concerns I had when I read the Clean Water Council's report was that they have not had an expertise.
Representative Wiggins, speak into the mic, please.
Okay. They have not had an expertise in groundwater, and instead of the outcome of this is they still don't have an expertise in groundwater, and that is the big shortfall in our state agencies. So how is it that we get out of essentially the rut we're in, where there is not the capacity within the agencies and now within the council to deal with groundwater?
Ms. Flood.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wiggins, that's an issue I think that as the Clean Water Council members spoke to yesterday, talking about developing that additional expertise, and I think the state agencies as a whole are working on a plan also to move our understanding of groundwater further along.
Representative Wiggins.
But we've had several years to do that, and Mr. Chair, that's the problem I see. We almost, in my judgment, we're going backwards, not forwards. We're spending less money on groundwater. We're thinking about it less. And to say, well, we're going to be thinking about it next year is not a good response when we specifically know that that's one of our biggest problems, and we know that we don't know where our groundwater is. The one group that looks at groundwater along with DNR was ignored in this proposal. I was astounded. So that's so basic, and then to ignore the very basic thing that we should be doing tells me something is amiss, and I don't understand what's amiss, so help me out there.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wiggins, I believe DNR is present here today if you would like to pose that question to them.
Representative Wiggins.
No, actually, I would like to pose it to you, thank you, because you are in your rules, you are to prevent groundwater degradation. So that is a question for your agency, as well as DNR, as well as Ag. It's not shifting it off to someone else.
Ms. Flood.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wiggins, part of the effort to get additional funding to SSTS programs is an effort to enhance our groundwater protection.
Representative Wiggins.
That is a small part of the problem. I'm glad you're doing that, and I hope you're measuring viruses. I mean, Representative Torkelson and I had the unfortunate experience of hearing about viruses in groundwater when I don't think either of us had heard about it before. So that is something we need to do. But this is Minnesota's drinking water, and maybe we just if the capacity isn't with you, maybe we need to just have this discussion in this committee a little more. But I would have hoped to have had the leadership from the agencies.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Flood. Representative Torkelson, welcome to the testifier table.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's my pleasure to be here. Page is in. There we go. Thank you. This is going to be the committee's first look.
Representative Torkelson, if you could just wait one moment. I think we have a quorum here. And Representative Pepin, have you perused the minutes of February 22nd. Would you care to move them, please?
I will move the minutes of February 22nd, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are once again passed. And now, Representative Torkelson, if you would, explain your bill to us.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair. This will be the committee's first chance to take a look at the Clean Water Legacy Bill for this year. This is an informational hearing today. We will not be taking amendments or taking any action on the bill, but it'll be a chance to review where the bill, what shape the bill is in today, and we have representatives, I believe, of all the affected agencies here today, so as questions come up today, we can bring agency people forward to answer those questions. I hope that as a result of today's hearing, that when we do bring the bill to committee, we'll shorten that process quite dramatically. We all heard from the Clean Water Council yesterday. I personally serve on the Clean Water Council. I've been on the Clean Water Council since its inception. As you were told yesterday, the Clean Water Council is a result of the Clean Water Legacy Act that was passed in 2006. It was created in that statute, and as we review the bill today, we will see some changes in the stature of the Clean Water Council and in its responsibilities, especially focusing on groundwater. Clean Water Council presented their recommendations yesterday, and they are very closely reflected in the bill that we're going to review today. The colored spreadsheet that was a set of sheets that was just being handed out is generated by the Clean Water Council. Could I have a copy, please? Thank you. And it is organized by activities and color-coded. And if you are interested in how it affects each agency, that is near the back of the document, and those activities are grouped in the back of the document by agency. You also have a spreadsheet prepared by the House research staff that shows the various spending categories in the bill, and in this case they are grouped again by agency, which closely reflects the order they are in the bill. And alongside that is a brief explanation of what happened in those particular areas in the first biennium of the Clean Water Legacy funding. So with that, we will step through the bill, and as questions come up, I think we should address them as they come, as we're going to be doing this kind of in agency order. The first section of the bill deals with the Department of Agriculture, and the first area of spending has to do with monitoring for pesticides. This is an ongoing effort, $350,000 each year. $350,000 each year of the biennium. I should also state that it's unclear at this point whether we're going to pass a one-year bill or a two-year bill. I'm presenting a two-year bill because it's much easier to compare it to the governor's recommendations and compare it to what happened in the first biennium. It's possible that once this bill comes to the committee in the form that we want to pass it, we may knock it down to a one-year bill, depending on the leadership of our illustrious chair, Mr. Representative Erdahl. So that's a possibility, but we thought for the sake of clarity of presentation that we would present the two-year bill today. So then going on with the line items, the $350,000 per year to the Department of Agriculture for monitoring of pesticides is an ongoing effort. The next item would be the $850,000 a year for increased monitoring, especially related to nitrates in groundwater. And then as we move along, two $5 million appropriations the first and second year are to do with the best management practices, I believe. And moving on then, $700,000 each year for research pilot projects, having to do with the best management practices. $1,050,000 each year, again related to best management practices. Then the next item in the bill did not appear in the governor's recommendations. My understanding is that it was a Clean Water Council recommendation that did not make it through the process, so this will be a point we'll have to work our way through. But it is $250,000 each year for a recent research inventory database containing water-related research a summary of water-related research activities. With that, we'll move on then to the PFA, Public Finance Authority. A large amount of money, but area that is a program that has been working very well. $11,185,000 each year for the TMDL grant program. $4,275,000 each year for the Clean Water Legacy Phosphorus Reduction Grant program. $1,250,000 each year for small community wastewater treatment grants and loans under Minnesota statutes. And then we've added some language here to make it easier for them to utilize the funds at the end of the biennium. And that language states if there are any uncommitted funds at the end of each fiscal year under paragraph A, the PFA can award the remaining funds under any of the project, any of the programs based on their priority rank on the PCA's list. That helps them react to demand, as you know, this kind of projects demand, but as demand is realized during the course of the biennium, it doesn't always match up with our projections. This allows PFA to utilize the funds they have available.
Representative Torkelson, the TMDL funding here, do you know how that compares with the governor's recommendations?
I do not have a comparison chart in front of me, but if the PFA would like to come down and make that comparison, we'd be very happy to hear it.
Mr. Coleman, would you care to let us know?
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Terry Coleman. The governor's recommendation is for $22,400,000, so it's for the biennial.
Very close.
Well, pretty close. Slightly different.
Mr. Coleman, is that enough to reach the TMDL needs that you have?
Currently on, Mr. Chair and committee members, currently on this year's intended use plan, I think we have a total of about 40 million. I'll have to double check, but it'd cover about half the projects that said they would proceed this year with the amount of money recommended in the governor's office. And that's fairly typical. We usually get about 60% of the projects on the IUP to actually move forward. The other 40% drag out into the next year. Might be a little short, but close.
All right, thank you. Continue, Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. The next agency in the bill is a pollution control agency. $7.5 million each year to continue the effort to assess surface water quality across the state. As many of you may know, we're on a 10-year cycle to do that, and this money will keep us on track to complete that 10-year cycle.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, actually, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mike, please.
Representative Torkelson, I see the 20%, and that does keep us on a 10-year schedule, and that's good. But I don't notice the same language for the TMDL, so it looks like we're falling behind there. Is it your intention we remain on a 10-year schedule there, too?
Representative Farkles?
I believe it's the intention that we remain on a 10-year schedule there, too, but perhaps the agency would like to come down and comment on that. We have representatives here from PCA.
Welcome back, Ms. Flood.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Rebecca Flood with the PCA. It is indeed our intention to meet the 10-year cycle for TMDLs as well as monitoring and assessment.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mrs. Flood. I think a little amendment would just clarify that at some point.
On page 4, line 4.8 to 4.10, the agency shall complete an average of 10% of the TMDLs each year over the biennium.
Oh, I see.
So
thank
I
you.
Believe that we have the language in the bill.
Thank you.
Ms. Taylor, did you have a comment? Okay, thank you. Representative Torkelson?
Thank you. I have to get myself back on track here. So. We are now down to the groundwater assessment line on Pollution Control Agency, $1,125,000 each year of the biennium for groundwater assessment work. I believe this is along the lines of what Representative Wagenius is very much in favor of. We're doing our best.
We need a portion.
Next
water.
Is $750,000 each year of the biennium for a restoration project in the lower St. Louis River in Duluth Harbor. This is one of very few projects that are specifically addressed in the bill, but it's important that this language be in here because it allows us to access federal dollars, and so it's important that we have this in there. It's also a slight tip of the hat to Representative Murphy, but that's not the main reason it's there. So that is an ongoing effort. What's that?
It's a small hat.
It is an ongoing effort in Duluth. There's a lot of work yet to be done there. I have toured the St. Louis River outlet area, and there's a lot of work has been done, but there is more federal dollars coming our way, and we want to make sure that we can utilize those. Then we have $1,250,000 each year for the Clean Water Partnership Program, an ongoing program within PCA. Then $400,000 each year for stormwater research and guidance. $1,150,000 each year for TMDL research and database development. And finally, with PCA, $800,000 each year for NPDES and stormwater TMDL implementation. Next, the Department of Natural Resources. Total appropriation of $10,160,000. The first item, $1,350,000 each year for the continuation of an expansion of stream flow monitoring. $1,150,000 each year for the biological integrity, index of biological integrity assessments, an ongoing program. $130,000 each year for assessing a mercury contamination of fish. $1,955,000 each year for TMDL development and TMDL implementation plans for waters listed on the EPA's list. $1,500,000 each year are for water supply planning, aquifer protection and monitoring activities. And $450,000 each year for a web-based electronic water appropriation permitting system. $1,975,000 each year for shoreland stewardship, TMDL implementation, and technical assistance. And $1,350,000 each year for the high-resolution digital elevation data, commonly called LIDAR. That's an ongoing project. And finally, with DNR, we have $300,000 each year for delivery of decision support tools.
Representative Wagenius.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. If we could go back to line 6.21, what is it that we get for our money here?
I would ask
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd ask the DNR to come down and give us a brief explanation on that particular item.
Welcome.
Okay, Mr. Chair. My name is Dave Luthi. I'm the Acting Deputy Director for the Division of Ecological and Water Resources. Representative Wiginius, the $1.5 million is for the groundwater management area concept, where we take the aquifer information that we're getting from the County Geological Atlas, the monitoring data that we get from our monitoring network to determine what is happening in the aquifers, what the levels are changing, what direction water moves, and then to work with local units of government to implement that into a management scheme to protect and manage groundwater. So it's the package that brings the pieces together.
Representative Wiginius.
Thank you. I appreciate that. How much of the state will this cover with this amount of money?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wiginius, this is designed at a pilot approach to begin doing this. We have not done comprehensive management with all the entire areas of the state, and so I believe that we're looking at in the neighborhood of 3 to 4 groundwater management area pilot projects where we'd work intensively with the local units of government with the data as well as the monitoring of groundwater levels and dealing with the wells outstate, some expansion of wells outstate so that we can understand outside of the 11 county area also what is happening in our aquifers.
Representative Wiginius.
Okay, three pilots. I get the word three, but I don't understand how much of the state this would cover. Is this 10% of the state? Is it 20% of the state? Is it 0.5% of the state?
Ms. Duluthi.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wiginius, we have been working with an interagency team to identify where are the most important priority areas to do the groundwater management areas first, and so we have not defined the specific size. We are looking at the groundwater sheds on the surface water. When the rain falls, it flows in certain places on the groundwater. It's actually a different boundaries, and so from the Atlas work and from our work with the interagency team, we would identify in terms of quantity and quality threats to our groundwater resources around the state where the places we need to spend some attention first and build this understanding of the system and work with the local units of government. And so we haven't identified what percent of the area of the state, but we are working in the interagency approach, including health, ag, PCA, Bowser, and actually with Met Council and some other aspects to plan where we would do this and show effective use of the dollars.
Representative Wiginius.
It is hard to capture the outcome here, and that's what I'm trying to capture, because we, you know, the statute requires outcomes for what we do, and anytime we're doing something like this, we want to know how much of the effect of the state it's going to affect. Are you just maybe looking at Candio High and the Moorhead area? I know those have been areas of concern before. But if that's the case and this is a good idea, what about the rest of the state? I mean, that's my basic question on groundwater.
Ms. Duluthi.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wiginius. Clearly, we do need to manage the entire state and all the aquifers. And we need to do it comprehensively, looking at quality and quantity issues for it. I think that the groundwater management area concept is a new concept that kind of brings all those pieces together that the agencies are doing in terms of water quality and groundwater quantity management. And so we will put together a map and a schedule for that, but we're still developing the concept and we will demonstrate it in places, but we don't have a plan for the whole state, and I don't have an answer yet for you as how many places will clearly get done because we're still in the initial phases of how we pull all the partners together and the programs.
Okay. Mr. Chair, if I
could. Representative Wiginius.
Is that all right?
Yeah.
Representative Torkelson, as we go forward with this bill, it does seem to me that we need to look at proportionately how much money we're spending on groundwater versus surface water. This is a fairly small amount compared to the surface water amount, and we all know that groundwater and surface water intermix. So understanding one on a 10-year framework is good. Not even having a framework for the second to match the first is not good. So I hope that's a discussion that we can have about how we get on track to understand our groundwater in some small portion as good as we understand our surface water, because people drink the groundwater.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Wagenius, for those comments. Groundwater, of course, is very important, but if you look at the percentages on this bill, we are exceeding the mandated percentage that was in the constitutional amendment. So we are spending more on groundwater than was specified in the amendment. Really, much of the water work in Minnesota is driven by the federal government through the TMDL process, which focuses on surface waters. And so we're kind of turning the battleship here a little bit, and it doesn't turn instantly. It takes some time for these agencies to develop the expertise in these areas to really spend this money effectively, and to throw excessive amounts of money at a program that is not ready to spend them is not wise use of the resources either. We are increasing our emphasis on groundwater in many ways and in many agencies, and I believe that we're on the right track. Can we do everything with this money? No, we don't have enough money to do everything we would like to do regarding water in the state. We're looking for a balance, and I believe that we have struck a good balance here in this bill.
Representative Wagenius.
Representative Torkelson. When you're talking about the percentage in the Constitution, there's at least 5% drinking water protection. But in addition, in the Constitution, it says protect surface waters and groundwater, and they're parallel. So the 5% is above and beyond protecting, enhancing, whatever else other word we use, surface water and groundwater. So actually, we haven't met what the Constitution is requiring of us. And so the reason I bring it up, and I'll bring it up again, is because we're doing less, from my bird's eye view of this, we're doing less this year on groundwater than we did 2 years ago, and we should be in the opposite direction. So with that, I hope that's a discussion we can have. Okay,
thank you. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I need to get myself back on track. I believe we're up to the Board of Water and Soil Resources. The total appropriation for this agency is $27,192,000. $13,750 the first each year are for our pollution reduction and restoration grants. $3 million each year are for targeted local resource and protection grants. $900,000 each year for oversight, accountability, and results evaluation of local conservation program implementation. $1 million each year for the conservation drainage program. $6 million each year for riparian buffer easements and restoration. $1 million each year for wellhead protection area easements. $1,500,000 each year for community partner grants, $42,000 each year for a technical assistance panel to conduct restoration audits in response to the new statutory requirement passed in 2010. I believe that those are all of the items related to the Board of Water and Soil Resources. Again, there's some language near the end of that section that will make it easier for the agency to utilize all the funds available at the end of the biennium. Next up is the Department of Health. A total appropriation of $2,685,000, $1,020,000 each year for drinking water contaminants. What's that?
Contaminants.
Yeah, I had a cheeseburger stuck in my teeth.
Continue.
$1,020,000 each year for drinking water contaminants of emerging concern. $1,415,000 each year for drinking water source protection. $250,000 each year for well sealing cost share assistance. I would just note that pretty much all that money deals with groundwater. Next up, then, is the Met Council. $500,000 each year for implementation of the Master Water Supply Plan, which also, I believe, deals with mostly with groundwater. And finally, $5,000 each year for the Legislative Coordinating Commission, having to do with the website that they are in the process of assembling. It will make it easier for the citizens of Minnesota to go online and find out where their hard-earned tax dollars are being spent. That concludes the financial portion of the bill. The next portion of the bill deals with the Clean Water Council itself. As I noted earlier, the Clean Water Council was created as part of the 2006 Clean Water Legacy Act. That act was aimed at basically at TMDLs and surface waters. Since then, we have passed the constitutional amendment in 2008, which has generated the funds that are being allocated in this bill. My effort for the rest of the bill here is to kind of bring the Clean Water Council into the current situation that we are in with the Clean Water Legacy Act and the funds that are generated by it. So we'll run through that briefly. You'll see a number of places in here where groundwater language has been added to the statute, making sure that the council does address the groundwater issues. Also, at the very beginning, utilizing language from the Clean Water Legacy Act, Protect, Enhance, and Restore, so the language between the statute and the constitutional amendment do match up. Moving on through the bill, if you take a look at line 13.6 of the bill, there's the discussion between point and non-point source pollution has gotten to be kind of a burden, in my opinion and in the opinion of others. So we're looking at changing the language that we use and addressing regulated and unregulated sources of pollution. This more clearly identifies the categories and makes the ongoing discussion a little more easy to work with. So you'll see other spots in the bill, such as on line 13.19, where and 13.20, where again we're replacing point and non-point with regulated and unregulated. Moving on through the bill to 14.14, again we're adding language in regard to groundwater. And there are a number of other spots on page 14 where both groundwater and regulated and unregulated language is being changed. And again, on page 15, similar changes. When we get to line 15.22, this is where we are more closely lining the Clean Water Council up with the Clean Water Fund generated by the sales tax. Moving on to page 16, again, some language changes at the beginning, but then we get, starting with line 16.7, we get to the actual Clean Water Council, and I have a few changes in mind for the council in this bill. Just first off, to make it clear that it's the voting members of the council that will, from which the chair will come. We're adding the Department of Health. That was one of the agencies of the state that was not included in the original bill, but because they deal especially with groundwater, it's been important that they be part of the conversation And in reality, the Department of Health has been at the table for quite some time, but this makes them an official one of the agency members of the council. Then starting on line 16.19 and going through 16.25, we're rearranging the council to allow for legislative representation. I would just remind everyone that the council is an executive branch council. It serves in the executive branch, and there is no intention to change that. But it's been very obvious to me and other members of the council that we need a connection to the legislature. So this would appoint two representatives and two senators as non-voting members of the council. And they would, it's kind of my hope that they would, in part anyway, serve similar to function to what the Legislative Water Commission served at one time. Those that have been here for a longer time might remember that at one time there was a Legislative Water Commission that involved some legislators that were especially interested in water issues and would kind of act as the communication network for the legislature when it came to water issues. So I'd hope that the legislators that are appointed to the would be appointed to the Clean Water Council would tend to act in that same fashion. The ongoing from there, the 19 voting members of the council does not change. Those are the same members that have been outlined in the past. Moving ahead, then we are not changing the. We're not going to allow the lobbyists in, and we are no longer going to allow the legislators as voting members, so I'm eliminating my own position on the council with this language. Moving on, then, the compensation for legislative members would be at the discretion of the legislature, again, keeping that separation between the executive and legislative branches intact. And the language in 1732 and 33, again, tying the council to the Clean Water Legacy Constitutional Amendment. And at the top of page 18, again, we're just tying the council and its recommendations to the Legacy Amendment. Language on 18.9 through 11. Again, is language right out of the constitutional amendment, I believe.
Representative Murphy, did you have a question?
I do have several questions, Mr. Chair. How did the chair of the council get elected, or
the chair of the council?
How do you get the chair now?
I'm sorry. The chair of the council is elected by the voting members from within their membership. We currently have the third chair of the council serving. We've had a smooth transition in leadership, and folks that have been willing to take a deep interest in this have been willing to serve. And so the chair of the council is a member of the part of the voting body of the council. One of the members is elected to the chair position.
So Mr. Chair, I don't understand then what's changing.
Representative Torkelson.
What's changing
with the selection of the chair?
Nothing.
Oh.
To my knowledge. Well, where are you?
I thought it was something that you said.
If I did say that, I misspoke.
Okay, so the chair will still be from the voting members.
That is correct.
Okay.
The only change as far as voting members goes is that a legislator would no longer be allowed to serve as a voting member of the council.
That leads to my next question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Do you think the legislators will come?
Representative Torkelson.
I think so.
If they can't vote?
Well, the problem there is keeping this an executive branch council. If we would try to construct this in such a way that the legislators were able to vote, that would cloud that line between the executive branch and the legislative branch, and that would cause some serious problems, I believe, for the structure of the council. I would trust that the legislators that are appointed to this council would be ones that are especially interested in water issues and especially interested in how the dollars generated by the Clean Water Legacy constitutional amendment are spent, and I think that they would show up. Now, since myself, speaking from my own experience, since I've been elected to the legislature, I have not been able to take part in the same way that I could in the past because of scheduling conflicts, frankly. But on the other hand, it's been a great value to the Clean Water Council to have a legislator at the table because I can bring information to the council regarding what the legislature is doing and thinking. So I think it's a workable model. I don't know why it wouldn't.
And Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, in your experience then of serving on this council, do you think that the 19 voting members is an okay number?
Representative Torkelson.
It seems big.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy. I understand it does seem rather large, but my experience with the council has been that it's actually worked quite well. The council is operated in a way where they have a steering committee and they have other committees to deal with particular issues, so not everyone tries to do everything. The steering committee meets monthly ahead of the council meetings to set the agenda and prioritize the issues that will be dealt with. And there's a budget committee that actually works with the numbers and in a smaller group. So the way the council has structured itself, I believe it's worked really quite well. Frankly, not every member has the same opportunity to get deeply involved as others. Some don't have the time or the interest to get down into the weeds, shall we say. But from within those 19 members, we have been able to find folks that are willing to go the extra mile.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Parkinson, I think maybe could be an example for some other groups because then there's a much greater and varied experience to expressed among the members, I would think, and that's a good thing. And all geographical parts of the state could be represented in a shared way, I think. Maybe you're on to something, Representative Darkelson. Thank you.
I'll reserve my editorial comment and continue, Representative Darkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just add that it's really worked quite well, but I would have to thank the G16. It goes with the G16 that really put this concept together. I would take no credit myself. Then
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, I'm tempted to say that these changes should all would recommend themselves well to the Government Operations Committee, but in part because I think we do have various councils and boards, and we have some best practices, but we also have, you know, this is moving more towards, I mean, it's a different model than Lessard-Sams, obviously. And I don't know what the rational reason is for structuring one way and one another way, and another council comes along. It seems to me that at some point we should have some kind of a discussion or understanding about what the best model might be for these types of councils. But and you know why this should be part of the executive branch. I know it existed previously and it was part of the executive branch, and it's all appointed by the governor and so on. So there's history, but I don't know if there's logic supporting it necessarily. So I don't say that this should go to GovOps because I don't know that the GovOps committee necessarily wants to become an expert in the legacy amendment and all of the advisory organizations that are part of that. But I don't know if you have consulted with Mark Shepard about this language and with other provisions in this council to see if he has suggestions for. Or just review it to make sure that he doesn't have suggestions on best practices or ways to make things work better. He doesn't always volunteer it, but he usually has a good opinion based on past experience of ways to improve these. So I guess my request would be that you ask his advice before we take action on the bill.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Winkler, Actually, this is kind of my second run at this. Mr. Shepherd worked with me closely last year with most of this language and the overall concept involved here and endorsed it wholeheartedly. But I will be glad to show him the current language that we have proposed in this bill and be certain that it's that he sees that it would be appropriate. As to your comments earlier about the structure comparing Lessard SAMS to the Clean Water Council, my logic, and I think it's appropriate, is that if you look at Lessard SAMS, they deal basically with DNR. There are other minor involvements, but it's pretty much a DNR type approach, and their approach to utilizing the funds that are made available is to evaluate project by project which projects should receive funding and which should not, similar to the way LCCMR works. And for a fairly narrow focused endeavor, that works quite well. If you look at the arena of water here in the state of Minnesota, it involves many more agencies, and we've seen that as we've gone through the bill today, that you've got DNR and Bowser and PCA, Department of Health, PFA, are all involved in the process. That's all executive branch activity, and it's, I think, worked quite well. As soon as you bring it, if you would turn around and make this a legislative council, it would change the dynamics of how the council works, and perhaps for the worse, in my opinion.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Winkler.
Actually, I do like the fact that it's large. When you have councils that are, by definition, appointing people who have an interest in the outcome, the more you have, the more diversity and the more dispersion of interests you have, the better this, I think you are for making sure that it doesn't become a way for certain, you know, interests to come together and divide things up amongst themselves with a handshake and a slap on the back. But when there are more interests, that means there's more eyes and more transparency. I think that's a good model, and I'll be following that to see if it works.
Continue, Representative Torkelson, please.
We are nearing the end, I believe. There's some more language on page 19 regarding groundwater, similar to the other language. Section 18 is just some language on availability, and I don't remember why we're repealing 114D.45. Perhaps Jen would like to help me out with that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jennifer Malatsky. I'm the staff administrator for the Clean Water Council. And I believe the...
Welcome.
Hi. I believe the repeal has to do with the language of the Clean Water Legacy Account.
Oh, I think that's correct, yes.
And so this bill closely links the Clean Water Council's recommendations to the Clean Water Fund as a result of the amendment, rather than the account that has no appropriations in it.
Thank you. Representative Torkelson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, the original Clean Water Legacy Act did create a fund that never had any money in it, and so we're erasing that title from statute.
Thank you. Representative Wiginius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at Section 10 on 1222, and you have added the groundwater, protect groundwater from degradation, and it is in parallel to protect lakes, rivers, and streams, and I think that's the correct way to do it, and I commend you for that. However, this does not include at least 5% of the money shall go for drinking water protection, and I was wondering why that wasn't included in here.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Representative Wiginius. I see no reason why it could not be included in here. We are obviously trying to closely reflect the constitutional amendment, and I believe that the House research will help me out.
Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, members, the 5% requirement is also repeated in statute when you look at the statute enabling the fund and the expenditures from the fund, so that 5% is repeated there in statute. It could also be here, but it is in statute as well.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Torkelson, I think it would be a good idea to put it in here just to remind the council what the full charge is. So, but I come back. Go ahead.
That's a friendly amendment. We'll work that into the, when we actually present the bill, I'm sure it'll be part of our changes in language.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, if I could continue.
Representative Wagenius.
You do have these parallel lakes, rivers, and streams and protect groundwater from degradation. So it would be helpful to know in this bill, in total, how much money goes for groundwater to protect groundwater from degradation and how much goes to the lakes, rivers, and stream portion. And maybe staff could help us with that division at some point. That would be, and then if I could continue one.
Representative Wagenius.
On the third thing, I appreciate the difference between an executive advisory committee and setting it up this way and a legislative advisory committee. The one comment that I would have is this is would have a tendency to be, as Representative Winkler said, divide up the pie among the parties. What seems to feel missing to me is any scientists who would bring new knowledge to this group. I think about the University of Minnesota in their civil engineering department has top-notch folks on wastewater treatment, and we've never I think use their expertise to the extent we should use it. But there would be other scientists that I think could be really helpful. Some maybe that specialize in groundwater. I'm not necessarily saying from the U, but from maybe St. Cloud State or other places where we would get always have the most current science that could frame our judgments, because one of the things that's the hardest thing for this legislature to do, and I think hard for the executive agencies, is to keep up to date on science.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, the council does meet monthly, not every month, but most months, and has had a number of presentations from a variety of specialists, including scientists. And if you have something special in mind, I'm sure that if you made a recommendation to the leadership of the council, they would be happy to consider that as an addition to their agenda. I would also remind everyone that the TMDL process is meant to be one that is informed by the latest science. It's not meant to take a snapshot and come up with a solution and not paying attention to what's going on in the world of science and in the real world of implementation. So that's an important suggestion and one that we should keep in mind as we look at the TMDL process to make sure that we do utilize the best information available at the time.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Torkelson. The TMDL process is based on the Clean Water Act of 1970. And since 1972, we have come to understand that there are other things that impact our waters dramatically, and it is those things that I feel that are missing here. Because they wouldn't be in a TMDL. We don't consider them in TMDLs. And we don't consider them in monitoring and testing. So we had to, 2 years ago and 4 years ago, we had to set aside money specifically for looking at endocrine disruptors because it was not a habit of the agencies. So that is why I bring up having scientists on
in this area. And maybe it is not an appropriate place to put them, but somehow we've got to address 2010 and not just 1972.
Thank you for those comments.
Any other questions? Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Torkelson, I wonder if I could refer to the color-coded sheet. On the front page, there's a summary at the top of the various categories, the agencies proposed, and then the council's recommendations. And number six, applied research and tool development. I just wonder, the agencies proposed 7.6, the recommendation was 13, and it's the only one with an increase, I think, and it's substantial. So I wonder if you could explain if this is an agency-based set of recommendations, how it grew so much.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Winkler, I would defer to our specialist here.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, the council looked at all of the proposals from the agencies, and they didn't cut out, add significant activities under this. What they did was reorganize what the agencies proposed. So if you page through the color-coded document, you'll see in the comments section, the Budget and Outcomes Committee recategorized different activities to make up this applied research and tool development category. They felt it was better suited in a different category than embedded activities in, say, the watershed restoration and protection strategies or in the non-point source. They just wanted to call them out specifically. So it's not so much an increase. It's just a different categorization of what the agencies propose.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Winkler.
You basically just rearranged them, and so that number looks different.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay, and then, Mr. Chair, one final
Representative Winkler.
Question for me. On page 12, section 8, the Metropolitan Council appropriation implementation of the Master Water Supply Plan. What was the, do you know the appropriation from the last biennium for that?
I would ask House Research.
Mr. Chair, members.
Ms. Taylor?
I believe it was $400,000 each year.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair. Representative Torkelson.
Just wait. Just 1 second, please. It is $400,000. I found it on mine, so. Now continue, please.
Are you comfortable that all the appropriations are supplementing and not supplanting all the proposed appropriations?
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, of course. I believe, yes, that we are doing our best to make sure that these funds do supplement, not supplant, the agency's budgets. These questions are harder to answer in times of declining funds available to the state, but personally, I do not believe that you can maintain, you know, when other agencies are, when we're having cuts throughout state government, all agencies are going to receive cuts. So you have to compare, you know, you have to look at this funding not, I'm not saying this the way I want to, but it's, I believe that it's not supplanting, that we are supplementing.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Murphy.
Representative Torkelson, when you were putting the appropriations together and the built together and the council was making the recommendations, did the agencies talk, discuss in their proposals the issue of not being perceived as supplanting?
I'm sure they did, but I would refer to Jen.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, the supplement issue was a very big hot topic issue for the council. They were very concerned about that. And in their interviews with all the agencies, they asked specifically of each agency if there was any issues of that. I believe that they were satisfied with the response. Refer to the agencies if you have further questions.
And
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Ms.
Malaitsky.
Could you spell that for us, please?
Yes, M-A-L-E-I-T-Z-K-E, Malaitsky.
Norwegian?
Malaitsky. When the agencies were talking about the requests or the proposed amounts of money that they were going to receive to do whatever they're going to do, did they talk about the administrative costs?
Ms. Malaitsky.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, that was not discussed at great length, no. The administrative costs were not. It was more focused on the programs that the agencies were proposing to do.
And
Representative Murphy.
And after the plan was put together, after the proposed bill was put together, did the agencies talk about the proposed or the administrative costs, or how would they would cover the administrative costs if there wasn't any money for them? This is an issue that this committee talked about extensively earlier in the month.
Ms. Malaitsky.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I don't know if the agencies have discussed the administrative costs. I would defer to them. The council did not.
Ms. Murphy, Representative Murphy.
Representative Torkelson, Ms. Malaitsky. On page 19, line 26 to 29. Representative Torkelson, what does that mean?
Representative Torkelson.
It's an attempt to put some language in the bill that does address the issue of administrative costs. As we discussed earlier in this committee, it's depending on the types of projects you're dealing with, administrative costs can vary considerably. For instance, just according to the size of various projects. So it's very difficult to put a set percentage or very specific language when we have such a broad spectrum of types of projects that are implemented with this bill. So this is an attempt to kind of give an outline of what we expect.
Okay. So,
Representative Murphy?
So, Mr. Chair, if an agency was affected because of Section 18, then they would eat it. Or their costs would be part of their agency's delivery.
Representative Torkelson?
I'm not sure I understand.
Okay, let me go to page 11, lines 19 to 25, which says that Bowser can get some costs paid for up to 5%. Is that because they're smaller?
I'm not sure I can answer that. Sorry, Mr. Chair.
Representative Torkelson.
Answer that. Perhaps we can bring down the Bowser representative to enlighten us.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Blackburn.
Thank you, Chair Erdahl. In regards to the question, Representative Murphy, this is utilizing the same appropriation language that we have right now. As far as our pass-through dollars on this, the majority of this funding goes out to local units of government. It is more than quadrupled the amount of grants that we process, the amount of programs that we put in place. in order to manage that and increase the amount of grants that we have by that percentage, we do require some costs in order to get that put on the ground. In order to review the application, set the criteria, work with all the local units of government through the application process, do the auditing that we need to do on every single grant, as well as the annual site visits to every local unit of government to review their grant files, there's a lot of costs associated with making sure that the $48 million in that budget is actually accounted for. So it's part of the requirements, we believe, for making sure that the Clean Water Fund is implemented according to the Constitution and there's a accountability for the public.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I would like...
Representative Murphy.
I would like to request that if any of the other agencies have something to tell us about Section 18, that they come forth.
Are there any others? Come on down.
I could have used that yesterday, my Sunday crisis.
Welcome. Identify yourself to the committee, please.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Myrna Hallback with the Pollution Control Agency, and I'm their Chief Financial Officer. And my concern with Section 18, as I read it, the indirect and the overhead that my agency experiences with doing the same kinds of activity Bowser has would not be eligible with this to do. And so we have staffing that do the TMDLs, that do the contracts, that do the monitoring, and per this, the standard way that we do indirect and pay for the rental of the buildings and the storage for the boats and the other would not be accommodated. It would add burden to us to actually create a line item and direct everybody into the appropriation language and would actually reduce the available money to do it, because I'd actually have to create a cost system by which I charge back each of the appropriations for the indirect versus the way we do it now, which is much more efficient. So I have a concern with the way the language is written. Doesn't mean we can't figure out a way to do it. I was here listening to the conversation earlier in the month about administration and how we do that. It's a valuable discussion, and I think we should do it, which we do every time the legislative auditor comes to visit us, and why we have an indirect plan of one direction, and DNR might do it a different way. There is no standard way you do that. But we try to minimize our whole entire administrative cost for the entire agency, which is about 10% of the entire agency.
Representative Torkelson, perhaps this is an opportunity to try to standardize how we do this. Discuss this with the PCA and see what can be worked out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is exactly my intention.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, so then are you saying that when you made the request for the amounts of money in here for the various activities that PCA is going to deal with, you already considered how much it was going to cost you, and so that's built into the amount?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, yes, it's built into this amount.
Okay. So,
Representative Murphy.
So no matter what, you're going to meet your outcomes, if they're written somewhere. You're going to meet the outcomes with the amounts of money that is granted for the activities that are contained in this bill.
Ms. Hallbeck.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes. It's just a matter of how we will account for the administrative component of it.
And can I assume,
Representative
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, that the other agencies did that too, with the exception of Bowser?
Representative Torkelson.
I think you can assume that, but if you want specific information, you should talk to the other agencies. I would just add that, you know, the objective here is accountability, that we have language in this bill that basically instructs the agencies that they need to be accountable for what they spend on administration, and that we have a mechanism by which we can say, you know, when we audit their activities, that we can say it was required in the bill that you be accountable. You are exceeding, you're stepping outside of those bounds, and we will have some language to back that up. It's very difficult, as I said earlier, to get specific with every project and every agency.
And so Section
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, so Section 18 is kind of an insurance section.
Representative Torkelson.
For the legislature.
I believe that would be an appropriate interpretation.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I have a question.
Ask away.
Sam Torkelson, did you, when you were putting in, your council was putting the proposal together, did you talk at all about how it fit in with the 25-year sustainable framework for the Clean Water Fund?
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, no, these recommendations were made prior to that report coming out, so they are not reflected. That is not a consideration of these recommendations. That report has been presented to the council. The council is aware of it and will utilize it as they see fit as we go forward.
Ms.
Representative Murphy.
Chair, Representative Torkelson, as the council sees fit?
Yes.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Nodding your head doesn't get picked up on the...
So, Representative Torkelson, if we wanted something more than... more stringent than that, then we would have to put the sustainable 25-year framework into the Clean Water Council's future legislation?
Representative Torkelson.
Well, I really don't believe, you know, as I listen to the presentation of the 25-year framework, I believe that the author stated that it was not really meant to be a specific recommendation for how these funds are spent. It's a bigger picture than that, and includes recommendations in a broader fashion. So I just don't think it's appropriate to try and stuff it into our bill. I think it's more appropriate as an instrument that would help inform the council as it makes its decisions.
Thank you. I'll think about that answer before you present the bill.
Representative Wagenius, do you have a question now, or should I call another agency down if they wish to respond to Section 18?
It's not on Section 18.
It's different. Any other agency on Section 18?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Linda Brummer from the Minnesota Department of Health. And I would just say, regarding Section 18, that Myrna Hallbeck's comments reflect our practices, too, at the Department of Health. We have charged indirect on the funds for the past biennium and had planned on it for the future biennium.
Thank you. So you are eager to work with Representative Torkelson as well to get language that will be consistent and work.
I am, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else on Section 18?
Mr. Chairman, Dave Lifty, DNR again. We echo the same comments, is that this is new work, has costs associated with making sure it gets done, and so we are in the same position. We'll need to work with Representative Torkelson.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Greta Gothier, and I'm the Government Relations Director of the Department of Agriculture. And I would echo the comments made already. We have charged indirects back onto this money in the past, and our current proposals have that built into them. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Anyone else on Section 18? Going, gone. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have three things I'd like to chat with Representative Torkelson about. And one we've already chatted about is the groundwater, knowing the portion of dollars going to groundwater versus lakes, rivers, and streams. The second proportionality thing is metro versus non-metro. Representative Winkler asked about the money to the Met Council. It's increased by, I think, $100,000 a year. However, in with the last round of funding, we put $4 million into a groundwater monitoring system for the metro area and funded not quite half of it. So that other half is left to be funded, and I note is not in this package. So it would be good for us to understand the math of how much of this money is likely to go out state versus into the metro area. We do have water, too, so we're keeping an eye on that. And the statute actually calls for balance. So the word balance across the state is in our statutory language, if I remember correctly. The other thing that I think we all have in common is we want to work on outcomes. But outcomes is for the resource. It's outcomes for the lake or the river or the stream. And so when I was looking at your language on page 8 at the bottom, I was glad to see there was sizable amount of money to provide oversight and accountability and evaluate results. But the measure struck me as not a measure of the resource. Is our water cleaner? Are we getting there? But it's a measure of program implementation, whatever that means. I think it's just to see if somebody took their grant and spent it the way they were supposed to. But there is no measure of, is the water better? And one of the things that we ran into 2 years ago when we first got this legacy money, because we didn't have very much time, I thought of the first 2 years as somewhat of a stopgap, that we would do the best we could for 2 years. But we didn't have in place what we needed to be able to show Minnesotans that this stream is better, this river is better, this lake is getting cleaner on this schedule. And we still need that. And I think that's another discussion that would be helpful for all of us to have, because I think all of us want to be able to say to Minnesotans, we're just not spending your money on projects. We are spending your money with specific outcomes for the water resource, and that you should be able to see something from the money you get, and we should show you measurable results. So I would hope that would be a conversation that we could have about this language at the bottom of page 8 at some future date.
Thank you. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Wagenius. I would just note that we will be spending $15 million in this biennium on monitoring and assessment. And that monitoring assessment process is what will inform us as to whether the waters are getting cleaner or not.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Part of the money I think you are going to be spending is on prevention, which is good, and it may not be in an area where we have a TMDL. We're doing measurement and assessment in specific areas. We're doing a little bit of measuring at the mouths of our 81 watershed, but that is a pretty it's not comprehensive, let's put it that way. So I don't, just because there's less phosphorus in a watershed doesn't mean that the fish are healthy, and we have to make sure that the outcome for Minnesota is this is the fish are healthy and your grandchildren and mine can go swimming. Besides the fact that we want to drink water.
Anything on that, Representative Torkelson? Other questions? Anyone from the audience wish to make a comment? Well then, Representative Torkelson, when do you expect to have this jacketed?
Thursday, I believe. It's been dropped in a hopper, sir. If I just might make a couple of quick closing comments.
Sure.
I did leave one item out that I meant to mention, and that is that I did depart from the Clean Water Council's recommendations when it came to education and public engagement. I have left that there was $900,000 aimed in that direction that I have left out of this bill. Instead, I've inserted language lines 5.19 to 5.22 is an example of that, I'm expecting that each project will incorporate civic engagement into the projects that are done, whether it be, and I'm not going to have a specific percentage or necessarily specific recommendations, but that if you're doing a project that you would be expected to communicate with the citizens in the area where you're doing it so that they know what you're doing and why you're doing it, whether that be with articles in the newspaper or a program on the radio or bringing school kids out to see what you're doing and why you're doing it or other landowners in the area. I think there are opportunities for civic engagement with every project that we do, and I don't think it's appropriate that we have a line item just for civic engagement. With that, I would thank the committee for their kind attention and look forward to bringing the bill to the committee, and I'm, of course, willing to hear suggestions between now and that time.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson, and as he's indicated, if you do have suggestions or whatever to make his good bill better, feel free to email or contact him. Anything else? Thank you very much. This case is closed.